We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We are part of the Blue Wire Network. I am Jason Pat. I actually do not have my normal co-host, Ricky O'Donnell, here today. He might be drowning his sorrows after the poor Chicago White Sox lost the Houston Astros in four games yesterday. I put $100 on the White Sox, not a White Sox fan. I jumped on their bandwagon and they really let me down. So that was unfortunate. So I think Ricky's licking his wounds here. Hopefully the Chicago Sky kind of get him back on the right track. They play in game two of the WNBA Finals tonight. And then obviously we got the Bulls coming up. We got the NBA season starting, I think, in a couple days. The Bulls start in a week. So that's exciting. The Bulls, their last preseason game, they beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. They finally didn't win in a blowout. They won their first few games in a blowout. They beat the Cavs by like 40 in the first game. They beat the Pelicans by similar in the second game. And I will have a Pelicans guest coming up here. I'll bring him home. Bring him on shortly. But yeah, they beat the Cavs in their third preseason game. It was nice to see Ayo Dosunmu, Bulls rookie, Illinois guy, winning them the game down the stretch with a few clutch buckets. I'm used to seeing that as an Illinois fan. So that was really cool to see. But yeah, Bulls 3-0 still in preseason. Some good news on the Patrick Williams front. He is back at practice. He's feeling good. It sounds like he might be able to play in this last preseason game on Friday against the Grizzlies. Not confirmed yet, I don't think, but it sounds like everything's trending that way. So that seems like he's coming back a bit early from his injury. We did get some not so great news on Kobe White. Looks like he's still, I think Billy Donovan said he's like 3-4 weeks away from even like them figuring out what the next steps are. So I mean, that's mid-November. He hasn't taken contact yet. He's still a bit of ways away from that. So looks like he might be out till mid to late November. Hopefully it doesn't go into December, but that's kind of a bummer. There has been also some roster churn with the end of the roster. I honestly don't even really care about that. We'll move on from that stuff. Let's talk about the Bulls. I mentioned I had a Pelicans guest coming on, so let's bring him on right now. This is Shamit Dua. He is also a Blue Wire guy. He's part of the In the Know podcast that is part of the Bourbon Streets Shots. I think I said that right. Yeah. Shamit, how are you doing today?
Hey, what's up, Jason? I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to do this and talk about what I assume is going to be a very fun topic in Lonzo Ball, but everything else, Chicago Bulls and Pelicans a little bit too.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, yeah, the Lonzo thing is dominated, obviously, a huge, huge aspect of the Bulls offseason. We're still waiting on the tampering thing. We can talk about that coming up here. Obviously, the Bulls, they got Lonzo right away in the sign and trade with the Pelicans. 4 years, $80 million going to the Pelicans was Garrett Temple, Tomas Satoransky, and was it a second round pick? Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the Bulls got Lonzo, and I guess we'll just start with just the whole Lonzo situation, because I know Lonzo pretty polarized. I don't know if polarizing is the right way to put it in New Orleans. I know he has, we're gonna have to get used to it as Bulls fans, some very eager, maybe very obnoxious fans, stands, whatever you want to call them, that I know you
Whoa,
and
man.
All the
be other careful
fans, yeah
be careful Pelicans with your fans. Language they'll come after you
yeah dealt with that I guess just what was your take on the Lonzo experience in New Orleans, how he's developed as a player, and just your thought on him, I guess, the Pelicans not paying up to keep him, or to maybe trying more to keep him, and him just joining the Bulls like right away, right out of free agency?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack with regarding Lonzo. He was brought in as part of the Anthony Davis trade. While I think most will agree that Brandon Ingram was kind of the centerpiece of that trade, some might at that time would have argued that it was the fourth overall pick. That may have been the centerpiece of the trade, but Lonzo Ball was not an insignificant piece by any means. And, you know, analytically, like, he was the best player at the time that came over in the trade. That's what a lot of people thought. You know, Ingram, who had gotten surgery with regards to a blood clot or a clotting issue, was going to be a question mark. We didn't know what his health was going to be, but he's also in the final year of his rookie deal, and so he was also due a lot of money. So I don't know if you know, at that moment, people thought so highly of Ingram. But whereas Lonzo, you know, he was only in the league for 2 years. He had a few injuries that, you know, that kind of held him back a little bit. And but people were optimistic about what he could be next to Zion Williamson as a point guard, and what he could be next to Jrue Holiday. You know, there was a lot of talk about them being sort of the best defensive guard duo in the league. And so there was a lot of intrigue around Lonzo. The biggest question mark, of course, was his shooting, both from the three-point line and the free throw line. And, you know, right away he came over and they made huge strides in correcting that. And, you know, his first year, he started off a little bit slow. And then as he settled into Alvin Gentry's system, and then especially as Zion came back, like, he really started snapping and shining in a fast-paced environment. He looked like a really good complement to Zion Williamson and then, you know, Brandon Ingram by extension. And then the next year, more of the same, where he started a little bit slow in Stan Van Gundy's system before turning it on around February, really starting to heat up from threes. And he takes a large volume of threes, yep. You know, 7-8 a game, and hitting 38% of them is no joke, right? And that's the kind of shot making every team needs. And, you know, it may not come with some sort of commanding gravity. As long as he's making them pay, that's the most important thing. And it's been really cool to kind of watch his evolution as a shooter, which I think is the area that people least expected it to take strides in, at least like this level of strides, right? It's rare for someone to go from like a total F to like a B plus, you know?
Yeah.
And so he, and you know, credit to him and the work he's put in that. And where I think Pelicans fans expected him to excel at was honestly where maybe they've been a little bit surprised. They expected him to be a floor general, someone who can create easy looks for teammates and kind of break down the defense and be a true point guard. And this is, I think, where there's the pretty big disconnect in kind of like maybe what he sees himself as and what he's actually been able to do so far on the court. He is excellent, excellent in the open floor. You know, he has this amazing ability to download the information that's in front of him, quickly assess who's going to be the open person and get them the ball. And that sometimes immediately after grabbing the rebound, right? He grabs the rebound, they'll see 70 feet ahead of him. Oh, there's someone, throw a pinpoint pass. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is exhilarating. Like, you know, he does these insane things. And then when you get him into the half court, it's the polar opposite. In my opinion, you know, his handle isn't quite that strong, and neither is his footwork with the ball. And so that prevents him from, you know, despite being a good size for a guard, despite being fast, because like in straight line speed, he has a lot of it, right? I don't think his hips necessarily turn well enough to, you know, when he receives a pick and he's turning that corner, he often doesn't, you know, he doesn't get past more than 1 foot into the 3-point line, right? He gets, and then that's when he wants to release the ball. He wants to throw that early pocket pass, which is good for it when you have a big like Zion, right? Get him that early pocket pass, get him in space. He's going to make something happen. But like when you're playing with like a plotting big like Steven Adams, he's not going to do anything with that pass. You know, when you're playing with Derek Favors, he's not going to do anything with that pass. And so, you know, when it comes to sort of like raising the floor of a team by just being someone who can consistently create advantages when the game slows down, that wasn't Lonzo, but he's definitely a ceiling raiser. And I think with the Bulls and how they have Zach, they have DeMar DeRozan, and even Alex Caruso and Vucevic, you know, all these guys who are really good at creating those breaks in the defense, creating those leverage points for Lonzo to take advantage of. It's a team that's uniquely suited to his strengths. And, you know, whatever the marketing they want to do about, oh, he's going to have the ball in his hands right, more, yeah. whatever, you know,
I was going to bring that up.
They can say all that to make him happy, but like realistically, and I think you're going to see this in the you've seen this in the preseason, like in the half court, you know, like DeMar is going to have the ball, Zach's going to have the ball, you know, and that's okay, right? That's not a negative, as long as Lonzo continues to do everything he's good at, which is push the pace, be a menace in transition, be a menace in the passing lanes. You know, he's been extremely active on the defensive end, it seems like, on the preseason, generating all kinds of, you know, blocks and steals and just, you know, all around creating havoc. And that's what my vision for Lonzo has been. And I wish, you know, that could have been who he was on the Pelicans. I just don't think it was meant to be for a couple of reasons. One, I think he was a little bit less accepting of that role on this team. And part of that, you know, has to do with Stan Van Gundy's just not, did not connect very well with the players at all. And part of that has to be that, you know, the Pelicans are not as suited as the Bulls are at their perimeter spots in terms of those advantage creation opportunities. When you take Zion off the floor, you know, it's really Brandon Ingram is the only person that can kind of create those looks. And as good as Brandon is, he's not an offensive engine yet. You know, he's not, you know, like I would say like Zach's better at that kind of stuff in a vacuum. Zach's also like more willing to take these, you know, like take a lot of threes. Ingram's taken as many strides as Lonzo has on his 3-point shot. But, you know, and he gets up a decent amount, like six or so a game, but he still very much prefers to get in that mid-range spot or get downhill if he can, where, you know, Zach's become sort of this like unreal shot maker, both off the dribble and, you know, in the catch and shoot. And that kind of stuff can like really carry lineups. And what the Pelicans sort of needed from Lonzo was to be someone that can create consistently for others, because they don't have that. And investing, you know, $20 million in sort of keeping together a team that was, you know, what, like a 36, I forget how many wins.
They weren't very good. Yeah, you know, they were all right. Flashes.
And so like what you're going to do is just, you know, you're doubling down on that skill set and making a team more expensive. And also, like, you're not really giving an opportunity to see what you have on your roster in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Kyra Lewis. So I understand, you know, like from a business perspective, why they moved on. And frankly, like I was arguing for it too. You know, it just seemed that the time had come for both parties to sort of
writing on the wall. Basically, I was going to ask, like, was there like a number you would have been like fine at? Do you think a number the Pelicans would have been fine at, or do you think he was gone like no matter what, like?
I mean, I think if it was like anything under like 18 million, they would have held on to that. And it's not that like, I think like Lonzo was like keen to get out. I just think he understood like, A, I have a real market. Someone is going to pay me what I want. And B, you know, like they're telling me what I want to hear as well. And so, you know, the Bulls they didn't shy away from courting him, you know, especially at the deadline and to the point where, you know, where the both teams are now caught up in a tampering case. But yeah, I mean, this seems like it's been in the works for quite some time and Clutch certainly identified Bulls as a good home for him. And he, you know, realized that, hey, I get to be in a little bit of a bigger market, get my money, and then, like, secretly, I get to kind of play the role that I'm good at without having too much responsibility. So it's a really good spot for him.
Yeah. Because you mentioned the point about like him having the ball in the half court, and like on media day, they were like, oh yeah, I talked to Billy, and like they've told me like I'm going to be more of a traditional point guard this year instead of like the 3-and-D role ahead. And I was like, I mean, maybe a little bit you will, but like, I mean, realistically, like that's just not going to happen. You have Zach and DeRozan there. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like maybe they give him a bit more opportunities, however they stagger. I mean, Billy's going to stagger these guys, obviously, but yeah, we'll see. I guess bring up back to the tampering thing. Like, I'm really curious, like what is going on there? Like, we've heard like nothing. I know like my guy, Cody Westerlund, wrote at the Score. Oh, he heard maybe they could lose a first round pick. I know Ethan George Strauss wrote something on his Substack about that same thing, and he went into this whole thing about Woj and Shams. I mean, have you heard like anything, or do you have any idea like how that's, or like any insight on that, or just your thoughts on it in general? Like, obviously, like tampering clearly happens all across the league. Like, obviously, the Bulls were talking to him at the deadline. They had the deal worked out literally right at the start of free agency. Like, I guess even just in general, your thoughts on the tampering thing, just like, should it even be a thing? Like, should
any team, like, I think it's all bullshit. I mean, yeah. Like, to be honest, like, first of all, the only reason this is happening is because Rich Paul couldn't keep it in his pants. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. That's what happened. Right. So, like Shams tweeted out, who is, you know, he employs Rich Paul as his agent as well, tweeted out immediately that this, you know, this deal was going down. They did not have to do that. You know, they did not have to do that. And from my understanding, neither team wanted that to come out with that kind of swiftness. But, you know, Rich Paul's like, hey, I did well for my client. I want the world to know it's free advertising. Let's go. And so, due to his eagerness, two teams are gonna suffer. And, you know, luckily for Rich Paul, the deal, you know, like, I think it was pretty quickly decided that the deal was not going to be voided.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, there was a brief moment where there was some sort of uncertainty there. Like, is the deal going to be voided? Are like the Pelicans going to renege on it? Are they going to, you know, like, there was a lot of speculation around that. But you know, they're like, okay, the deal went through. And now it's been like, what, 2 months, 3 months almost?
Yeah, I mean, that was what, beginning of August? So it is 2.5 months at this point. Like the Bucks one last year with Bogdanovich, I think was like a month. So we're literally like twice.
Not even. That was like within a week. And then, you know, like Bob Myers said something about Ben Simmons. And then like the next day he gets fined $50,000 for tampering. It's like, oh, you can do that investigation. And then like, you know, like you have Kelly Olynyk signing at 6:12 instead of 6 o'clock. And apparently, you know, like, hey, we can hammer out a deal in 12 minutes, and that wasn't tampering. So the subjectivity of like how they choose to kind of enforce this, right, and kind of like the spirit of like what it's trying to accomplish just doesn't make sense to me from like an NBA perspective. Like, I think there's very real kind of like tampering issues and like other issues that question the integrity of the league that the NBA turns a blind eye on, and then they choose to kind of enforce this.
Yeah.
But with regards to what the punishment is and when it's going to be doled out, like, you know, like I think two weeks ago, I was hearing, you know, buzz about, oh, they're going to announce the punishment in like the following week. And that was 2 weeks ago. And they, you know, there's still crickets on that. And, but yeah, I mean, I think the speculation has been the Bulls are going to get hit a little bit harder than the Pelicans, and the Pelicans are going to mostly get hit for the Garrett Temple stuff, which is like,
yeah,
completely ridiculous. Like, really? Like, this is the, we're gonna get punished for signing Garrett Temple, who like apparently is now part of our starting lineup. I don't even know what's going on.
It's happened with the Bulls last year.
I don't know. I think it's all ridiculous. And I think, you know, just if your goal is to preserve the integrity of the game or protect small markets or any of that, you're not doing it. Come on, Adam Silver, do better.
Yeah. Like, I've wondered, like, the Bulls held out on the Lowry market and stuff. Like, they didn't include him in the DeRozan sign and trade. They held out and they got a first round pick back. Like, I wonder if they were doing that because they're like, we're going to need this extra first round pick because we're going to lose it for the Lonzo Ball tampering thing. Like, I wouldn't surprise me if that was kind of their mindset there. And it was nice to get that first back for Lowry, but there were rumors that it was going to be Lowry going in the DeRozan sign and trade. And then that, for whatever reason, that fell apart and they traded Thad Young in it instead. And a first round pick. So maybe they're like, well, yeah, we got to get a first for Lowry somehow instead. So yeah, really just kind of sucks. It's like bogus. Some of these teams, I mean, they're talking to guys obviously beforehand, players are talking to other players. I mean, we hear stuff about how, I mean, LeBron is having meetings with DeMar DeRozan and all these guys. And it's like, I mean, how do you enforce that?
The NBA was totally absent when the whole Anthony Davis situation was going down and how that was orchestrated. And, you know, that's okay. You know, we're, right, we're gonna let that happen, but okay. Anyways.
Yeah. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anyway, moving on from that, let's get back to, I guess, Lonzo on the court. Let's talk about his defense. We talked about his offense, but we briefly brought up his defense because I didn't watch a ton of Pelicans last year, but the Pelicans I did watch when they played the Bulls, I think the Bulls like roasted them multiple times, just guys getting wide open shots from all over the court. There was the one game where Zach and Kobe both hit 8 3-pointers. And I'm just like, is Lonzo because he's got like the hype of like a good defender. He's got good size, good instincts and all that kind of stuff. But like watching some Pelicans game and they were just awful defensively against the Bulls. I believe they did get better at the end of the season a little bit. In preseason, you brought up, he's been really good. He has been really good. Like in the last game, he had 4 blocks, 3 steals. I think in all these games, he's just racking a stuff on the stat sheet with his defense, deflections, and it's just been noticeable from the very start, the first game against the Cavs, his energy defensively and his disruptiveness defensively has been super legit. Like, we'll see if that carries over to the regular season. Obviously, I hope he does. So what is your take on Lonzo's defense? Was it not caring about Stan Van Gundy and his system thing? Was it just like the roster? Obviously, with Eric Bledsoe there was kind of just like a weird roster construction there as well. Like, I don't even know if what he showed is the right way. I just feel like watching the Pelicans when I did, like, it just wasn't good defensively.
Yeah, no.
Your take on Lonzo's defense.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the Pelicans, you know, especially for the first half of the season, were a total disaster defensively. And they were playing this scheme that Stan Van Gundy wanted to run where they packed the paint at all costs at the expense of threes. And so every game was a shooting gallery. And you know, like you said, when they played the Bulls, Zach and Kobe just got off shots and shots and shots, and they, you know, they made it rain. And so with regards to Lonzo, I think his strengths lie more of as an off-ball defender in the passing lanes, generating events, creating habit, helping out, you know, on drives and stuff, digging in from the nail. As a point of attack defender, I think he leaves a lot to be desired, and I think he's a bit miscast in that. Not that he can't do it, because, you know, he's pretty big and rangy, so you can put him on a lot of different players. But, you know, he gets wiped out with screens pretty frequently, to the point where it's not a reliable, you know, it's not something you want to rely on. Yeah. And so I think, you know, like, I think Alex Caruso, yeah, for the Bulls specifically would be better suited in that role, and yeah, it'll allow Lonzo to continue to do what he's good at. And so last year, yeah, I mean, I think Bledsoe just kind of mailing it in, whatever, did, you know, hurt the Pelicans at the point of attack. And then Lonzo, again, because Bledsoe couldn't really like carry his own weight. When Lonzo was put at the point of attack, he was typically tasked with defending some of the better players in the league, because you can't put Brandon Ingram on him and you can't put Zion Williamson on. They're going to hide those players.
Yeah.
So who does the responsibility fall to? Well, it's Lonzo. So his workload was considerably high with regards to that. And so I do think it was a little bit, you know, unfair to expect him to like totally excel in those situations. And the scheme wasn't fantastic either, but it's just one of those things where like, it would be like critical moments in a game. Okay, we put you on Dame Lillard. Here comes Nurkic for a screen and you're completely taken out of the play.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff, you know, it's like, that hurts to see, because when you run a pick and roll defense and your point of attack is taken out of the play and you have Steven Adams in space trying to guard a guard, it's like, okay, that's not good. And then if it's Zion in space, and that's not good. and you can go down the list of Pelicans players and you're like, okay, yeah, there's not really a good option there. And so ball containment was a problem.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls do kind of have some of those issues too. Vucevic is slow-footed. Like, I wouldn't call him awful defensively, but like, he can't really move. I mean, he's a drop defender. DeRozan, obviously not good. Zach has gotten better, but I mean, he's still, I wouldn't call him good, mediocre at best. Patrick Williams is probably gonna have a lot of responsibility defensively once he gets healthy, but he's what, 20 years old, so he's young. That you mentioned Caruso. I was gonna say that as well. Like, Caruso, I think he's gonna play a ton of minutes on this team. Like, they got him for the MLE. He could wind up being a huge steal. He's looked awesome.
Man.
Yeah, he has been awesome. Really good so far. And like, they're gonna need that point of attack defense a lot for sure. And yeah, it seems like that will really help Lonzo. So I would bet Caruso probably plays 25-ish minutes a game. He'll probably be in their, a lot of their closing lineups.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that lineup, like, with Caruso, Lonzo, DeRozan, and Zach with Vucevic, that's just going to murder people. I mean, there's a lot of you talk about there's not like that many like sound defenders in DeRozan, Vucevic, and Zach, but like there's a lot of speed and length and athleticism in that lineup. And so you can cover a lot of ground if you're properly bought in. And sure, you know, you might not be the most technical of all defenders or units, but you know, I think it can be good enough. And, you know, Vucevic is such a good rebounder that I don't think you'll have issues rebounding with that lineup. And I'm excited to see, you know, lineups, those like DeRozan Caruso lineups or like LaVine Caruso lineups. Those are going to be a lot of fun. I think he's I don't want to say he's like the best pickup that you guys had, but it's like the best value pickup that you guys had.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a Bulls season preview thing for Forbes, and like that was one of the sections. It was like best like bargain contract you got. I said Caruso because they got him for a mid-level. He's making whatever, like $8 million this year, $8.6 million. So like that's just really solid, and he's gonna be a lot of help. Yeah, that line, if you mentioned there, is I think what a lot of Bulls fans will think will probably be their closing lineup. Because some of that could depend on how Pat develops, but like to start, I would guess we see Caruso in there instead of Pat, and they just really downsize around and play basically four guards around Vucevic. So, yeah. So I guess just before we real quick Pelican stuff, I know you got to get out of here quick. I guess your just take on how the Bulls are going to be. They're kind of polarizing. I feel like you've had some good natured ribbing of the Bulls and the whole situation on Twitter. What do you make of them? What do you think? I guess just a guess at how good they'll be, or like I think their over unders are like 42, 43 right now. Do you think they go over that? Do you think, where do you think they are, like, are in this kind of in that Eastern Conference? Like, there's a big just kind of blob there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Bulls have more top end talent than a lot of those blob teams. So it's hard for me not to just say like, okay, you know, when I look at those like teams, it's like there's Charlotte, there's Indiana, there's I guess you can put Washington, whatever. And then, you know, like, you know, there's New York. Even like with when it comes to New York, it's just like theoretically the Bulls have three all-stars.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the Bulls have on their roster. And so I have a hard time not seeing them be successful in offense. I mean, I think their offense is going to be great, especially because Billy Donovan loves to run a lot of like heavy guard lineups. Can their defense be good enough? And like, I know like people like Zach Lowe already like talked about this. So it's like, okay, like what the defense is. And like, right. I'm oddly bullish on it for the regular season. I think as a playoff team, they have a lot of holes that can be exposed, but in the regular season, you just need to execute a scheme, man. And like, you just need like, okay, like I've seen the Charlotte Hornets of the old when Steve Clifford was the coach, and they had Al Jefferson manning the paint. And it's like, yeah, they had a really good defense because they didn't turn the ball over. So opponents didn't, you know, get a register transition opportunities. They rebounded the heck out of it. So there wasn't any offensive rebound opportunities for the opponent, and they're going to just play the analytics. So they're going to play a conservative drop, and they're going to force you into mid range shots, and you beat them, you beat them, you don't. And then you have to try to outscore them on the other end. And so I wouldn't be surprised the Bulls hitting the over on the 42 mark. The question gets dicey if injuries begin to happen, because I'm not a fan of the Bulls' depth, particularly in the front court.
Yeah, it's questionable for sure.
Yeah, and you know, like I think Derek Jones Jr., interesting player, just not sure, you know, how much you can rely on him. You know, Pat Williams, I'm a huge fan of. I mean, I think he was my favorite player in that draft class. You know, love Pat Williams, and hopefully he can continue to develop. But behind Vucevic, it's just like, yeah,
it's Tony Bradley, Alize Johnson. Not much proven stuff there.
It gets dicey. And, you know, like, and so I'm curious to see how Billy Donovan will handle that kind of adversity if it pops up.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Obviously, I'm a bit of a homer, so I think they're going to get to go over. We'll see. I'm hoping like mid 40s, something like that, because they do have the talent, like you said, top end talent in the regular season. If they stay healthy, I feel like they should be able to bum slay and then win, steal some games against the better team. So we'll see. Real quick here, we'll finish on some Pelicans talk. I guess you Garrett Temple is starting for the Pelicans right now.
Man, nobody knows about anything with the Pelicans.
Obviously, Zion is a just complete who knows. Hands in the air. What the heck's going on there? I saw Willie Green saying today that like they're still waiting on his scans on his foot, and it's like, and that was like he said that a couple days ago he was getting scans, and now they're still waiting. The season's a week away. Like, when David Griffin came out and said on media day that he was going to be ready for the start of the season, my guess was no, that he's not going to be. And that obviously that came out of nowhere. Fact that he had broken his foot. So it just like, yeah, it just seems weird. Obviously you get the Zion drama is a whole nother conversation in general, but like, I mean, how are you feeling about the team going there? And like, how's like Satoransky looked and all that stuff?
Bro, I have no idea. you know, everything regarding Zion and his injuries is always the Bermuda Triangle. Like nothing comes out and things just disappear. So I don't think he's going to be ready to start the season, as he, even though it was him himself who was like, I will be ready game one. Yeah. He promised us. Okay. So I don't know who's going to replace him in the starting lineup. In the preseason, they've been starting Garrett Temple. But Brandon Ingram has also missed three out of the four games of the preseason. And they've had, you know, they've moved around different pieces. I would personally hate it if Garrett Temple was starting. I just think there's better wing talent to put out there. You know, the Pelicans need to figure out what their guard rotation is going to be. But personally, I would like to see a starting lineup of Devontae Graham, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Brandon Ingram, Trey Murphy, and or Najee Marshall. I prefer Trey because he's a better shooter. I understand not wanting to put a rookie in that spot. Yeah. So, you know, you put Najee out there and then Jonas Valanciunas. I would, that's the combination that I would like. And then, you know, just kind of figure out what to do with the bench. Ideally, Garrett Temple gets 0 minutes because you have Josh Hart on the bench. You have, like I said, one of Trey Murphy or Najee Marshall on the bench. You have Herbert Jones, who is a rookie, but I think he looks fantastic and could probably do with more with the minutes than Temple can. I do think Satoransky gets more minutes than expected initially, especially because he's just one of those players that coaches are going to trust off the bench.
Solid and, vet off the bench.
Yeah, just, you know, he plays within himself, maybe to a fault.
Yeah, definitely.
And sure. So I think he's going to get the minutes. So we'll figure that out. But, you know, the preseason just been a mess. The Pelicans have been like down 30 points in every single game they've been in. And so nobody knows. Nobody knows what the hell is going to happen October 20 when the season starts. I certainly not me. And when you ask the coaching staff, when you ask Willie Green, he doesn't give you a straight answer. So Griff is going to come out with some sort of update on Zion this week. It's going to be a mess.
Fun times, man. I must say I am happy about the Bulls not being a mess so far. We'll see what happens, but they've been such a mess for a few years. It's nice to not be the team that's a complete hot mess. So hopefully everything works out. Obviously Zion is awesome when he's healthy. Love to watch him play. So hopefully he is able to get back on the court, and obviously the Pelicans have a very intriguing team when he is there. So I'm really hoping for your guys' sake that he's back soon, that he stays healthy, but yeah, huge question marks right now. All right.
No, yeah.
We'll wrap it up here. Please let our listeners know where you can shout yourself out again, shout out the pod and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So Blue Wire Podcast Network. I host a podcast with Mason Ginsberg called In the Know, which is spelled N-O like New Orleans, In the Know. And then you can find my writing at bourbonstreetshots.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, where I will kindly remind you that the Pelicans have more national TV games than the Bulls at Fear the Brown. Yeah, so that's everywhere you can find me.
Oh, man. Awesome, man. Thank you again, Shimmy. This was great stuff. Great insight on Lonzo, all this good stuff. I literally, me and Ricky had been talking about having you and Mason on for the longest time. They're like, I was like, we're going to wait for the tampering investigation, like have those results come out, and then we'll have you guys on to talk about it. And of course, the investigation results have not come out yet, and the season's starting in a week. So I'm like, we got to make this happen at least.
Bro.
And then it'll be just me and you, but maybe another time we'll try to get all four of us on together. But this was great. Thank you so much. I've said good luck to your Pelicans, and we'll see what happens with all the Zion stuff.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So for us here at Cash Considerations, as always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Nice little Blue Wire crossover going on right here. Check out Schmitz Pod, In the Know. Check out all the other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. We got the NBA season coming up. Obviously, go check out all those great NBA pods. We got MLB playoffs. We're in the middle of the NFL season. So much good stuff happened at Blue Wire. So please check out all that stuff out. Us here at Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, please give us those 5-star ratings. Give us those reviews. That helps us out. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those good places. On Twitter, I'm at Bulls _J. Ricky, who's not here, but I'll shout him out. He is at SBN _Ricky. Next coming up, the Bulls got one more preseason game. That's Friday against the Grizzlies. We will probably not have another pod this week, but we'll probably then be back with a Bulls season preview pod sometime either over the weekend or early next week. So thanks again to Schmidt for joining me, and we'll talk to you guys next time.